And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba to Bloom, episode 305. Getting some ADP targets and fades as we get ready to head into the new year, and draft season continues to ramp up in a big, big way. Hope everybody's having a happy holiday season and has a Merry Christmas in the coming days. But until then, you got us to listen to, and you can find us on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/Bubba Bloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We're good, man. Merry Christmas week to you. Yes. Happy holidays to everyone out there this week. Hopefully you can use this time not to catch up with friends, not to catch up with family, but to catch up on Bubba and the Bloom, you know, position preview episodes. We did catcher and first base last week, and then this week we're doing ADP targets and fades for you. So hope this is a little audio gift under your tree, stocking, whatever. That's all I got, man.
No, it's all good. It's all good. We won't, as we told you guys before, we're pre-recording, so we're not going to do a big news update, but my goodness, the hot stove went nuclear in Tampa Bay recently. Yeah. So yep. That was a wild one. In Baltimore, look at you guys. Look at you building a darn good-looking team up there.
Getting that pitcher that we said they need. Getting that pitcher, yeah, in Shane Boz.
That's one of my favorite pitchers to target this draft season, so that makes it even more interesting, at least later in drafts. We won't talk about it today because he's outside that ADP for now. We'll see how that continues to change. But, yeah, the hot stove's picking up. I think people want to have a little extra under the tree for Christmas. Makes sense, and we'll see where things keep heading in that regard, because it feels like in years past, if it's not done by Christmas, it feels like we don't get much until spring training. Unfortunately, there's a little gap in that.
Yeah, there's definitely a lull around, yeah, so, around this time, but at least we got a little bit before our before the break.
Yep, we got a little bit of something to talk about, so we'll get you updated there at some point in time. I'll have a few covered on the Patreon with news and notes with even throughout the break, so you'll be good to go. But we're doing our yearly targets and fades episode, and it's early in draft season, so these are guys, as we've done a few drafts, some more than others, that we are already looking at pretty heavily based on ADP. Some we're definitely adamantly not taking an ADP, and obviously everything can change. Locations can change. Price tags can change. But for now, as we enter draft season and really, really get going in draft season, in draft champions, these are some of the players we're targeting and fading with inside the top 200 ADP. Anything else you want to add to that, Ryan, before we make ourselves look very strong or very stupid?
No, not really. Just one other just quick reminder / heads up. We mentioned this on the first base show, but listener leagues are open for signups. So you are itching to get into a listener league, which again are 15 team auctions that we have done the last 2 years over on the NFBC, $50 entry with prizes for both the league and overall. Let us know. We're getting early head counts for how many leagues we want to try and fill this year with the NFBC. And we will be sending out a kind of a more formal sign up form with actual dates that you're available to draft in February. These auctions will all be in February, so just keep a lookout for that. But for now, let us know, either, you know, just message one of us, email the show, bubbabloompod@gmail.com. if you're interested, and we'll get you more information when we can in early January.
And remember, you got to be a free or paid Patreon with a rating and review to qualify for said leagues, and more to come with that. But yeah, get in, let us know. We'll get you going there. All right. Targets and fades inside the top 200 NFBC DCs last 30 days using the wonderful Patreon ADP tracker that Ryan put together to help us with these ADPs. I'll let you go first on this one. We're going to go position by position. Catcher, obviously, starting things per usual. But I'm letting Ryan go first because, A, I think people know who I'm picking. At least they should by now. And B, it's an old. So I'm just going to, like, yeah, we got to stay on brand. We got to stay on brand here. Like, I'm not against this player, but I'm respecting my elder here and letting you go first on this one.
Yeah, we should all respect this guy. If, you know, when you can draft a 36-year-old catcher, you always do that. So my old / target at catcher is Salvador Perez. I just feel it, and we talked this through on the catcher preview. last week that there's a big, in my opinion, a big value cliff kind of right after Salvador Perez at catcher. And so you want to get in on that before the cliff happens. I think Salvador Perez is probably one of those last by ADP, one of those last true catcher ones that I think you can pretty much count on despite the old age. There's really no drop in skills whatsoever for Salvador Perez. I mean, almost had a career high barrel rate last season, had 30 home runs, but according to Baseball HQ in the forecaster, 37 expected home runs, only hit 236, but the underlying 261 expected batting average with a really strong strikeout rate for Salvador Perez is still there. So I don't see any kind of age-related decline. At some point, it's going to come. We all get older, as we know, but I think Salvador Perez still has another really solid year in him. I think the price is fine, and you never know when you're going to use that catcher slash first base eligibility, especially in draft and hold leagues.
Yep, no, Salvi's just fine as long as he gets the PT, which why wouldn't he? He will. I just hope it's a DH so Mr. Jansen can catch. That's what I'm hoping for there. But yeah, Salvi will be fine if he stays healthy. Like you said, another 150 plus games probably for Salvi, and just all the production in the world while he scores as Vinny P drives him in and wins a beer bet for me. So it'll be absolutely outstanding in that regard. My catcher's the Goose. This is pretty. I would have felt That's real dirty. I would have felt real dirty if I hadn't put him on here. But I have waxed poetically about the Augustin Ramirez, for those that are living under a rock, for quite a while. The power speed is ridiculous. Like, he only hit 231 last year, which people will point to, and I think that's a joke. Like, he had a 253 BABIP. He underachieved in that regard. We saw a 23-year-old rookie hit 21 homers, steal 16 bags while striking out less than 20% of the time. That's a hit tool I can get behind. That's a guy in the minors in 2024, the Goose, 25 homers, 22 steals while hitting 267. He showcased great plate discipline his whole career. He's got power, speed. I made the comp, like, this is a JTR profile from back in the day. I think he's better, actually, because, like, saw a guy with an 11% barrel and a 47% hard hit rate. We talk about you can't, like, live and die by X stats, but when there's a gap, it's worth looking at. His average was 231. His XBA was 263. Like, he seriously underachieved. Even the projections have him hitting 250 next year. And we talked about it on the catcher show, the 13 steals. I'll take the over. You'll take the over on that one with Goose. His defense isn't great, but they should first base, DH, catcher between those three spots. Goose should still play plenty, because if you look at their lineup, like, really, let's be honest, who's much better than him in that lineup? There's no reason to have him out. So his ADP is like 76 right now. He's the fifth or sixth catcher off the board. I think he's a top five catcher for sure. Obviously, most do if he's fifth or sixth. But he's a guy, if he runs pure and we see regression from Raleigh, and God forbid King William takes a step back, there's a world where I could see Goose finishing near the top. So love Augustin Ramirez.
Going right after the law firm of Rice, Langoliers, and Goodman. And I like him just as much, if not more, the Goose than those three.
Perfect. Now, our fades are great because they're teammates. So, who's your fade?
Yeah, I mean, this became pretty apparent. I mean, your fade is my fade as well. I think we are collectively fading Baltimore catchers. I'm taking Samuel Basayo. I just think at a 163 ADP, I would you've got two major questions with Samuel Basayo. Like, yes, the scouting reports, the prospect number, the numbers in the minors all look fantastic. You need two things to happen for Samuel Basayo to hit. You need regular playing time, and you need this transition to major league pitching to be pretty smooth at a 163 ADP. Now, if both of those hit, this is a potential top five catcher. And I think that's why Samuel Basayo is being drafted like 163, because I think you do have that ceiling. I just think it's a low percentage play that Basayo is going to hit that ceiling. I would rather just take Francisco Alvarez, Kyle Teal, 20, 30 picks later, fellow old JTR, 50 picks later type deal than the youth of Samuel Basayo.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, he's a ceiling play. You hope it all clicks, but it comes down to figuring it out at the big league level. It comes down to playing time. Because as long as Rushman's here, who's my fade, they're going to probably split time, one would think, unless one DH is somehow. But the Orioles just keep adding pieces to the puzzle to make all of that extra playing time tougher and tougher to come by. Like, first base is occupied now. Obviously, that's not changing. When people once thought Basayo or Rushman could play first, that's out. So now you got DH, like you got Mountcastle, you got a ton of guys there, literally.
That's the thing. Yeah. So Basayo and Adley probably DH a bit, but the Orioles are like the mini Rays in terms of they just have a lot of mouths to feed. If assuming they keep, like, you know, Coby Mayo, Mountcastle, like you said, Tyler O'Neill, I don't think they can have a kind of full-time DH allotment between just Adley and Basayo. There's too many other guys that they need to mix in there just to keep them fresh. So that's another kind of reason for the fade there, the playing time questions.
Yeah, and then so when that playing time comes into play, like, neither one can be a catcher one, and they're both being drafted as catcher ones.
Yes.
So that's why I was kind of like, because we're both on the same page on both of them, basically. But the irony is they both have the same ADP, basically, of 163. They're going right next to each other. So in the draft room, it's like people are Team Adley or Team Basile, and once one goes, the other goes, essentially.
Yeah.
But in reality,
I wonder if anyone has both. We have lost their listenership, I think.
If you have both, please stand up and take tribute like it's the Hunger Games, because you are going to war, folks. I wish you the best, and if you are correct, I will apologize, but that's a strategy right there at ADP 163. Like, the skills are okay for both. Adley, I've talked about plenty. He keeps deteriorating for me, and he needs to accumulate, and the accumulation's not there. So I won't beat that dead horse anymore. But, I'm fading Adley. You're fading Basayo. I think they're both fine players, but when it comes to fantasy, playing time, potential skill sets, they're all not making the ADP worth it. First base targets. This seems like something we just recently talked about. So what do you have here?
I'm going Christian Walker. This also became apparent to Christian Walker, on our first base episode. To kind of recap a little bit on first base, like, I think there's a really strong, like, top 10, 11 at first base. So in a 12 team league, you can certainly grab one of the goes, and in 15 team, I would recommend doing that as well. But if you're going to wait on first base, or if you want to grab an early corner, I just think Christian Walker at ADP of 190 is really good. I think he's got 30 home run power still. Projections have Christian Walker hitting like 230 right now, which I'm taking the over on. I think Christian Walker is more of a 240, 250 play. And, you know, in that park with that lineup, if you've got a 245-ish batting average with 30 home runs, that's not that far off from some of the early first basemen that are going in ADP, your Alonso, your Olsen, your Rafi Devers types. So Christian Walker, I think, is very undervalued right now. I am trying to get as much Christian Walker as I can. I think this is a really good buy at 190, given the projections and the skills and the consistency we've seen from Walker in the last few years.
Yeah, full agree with you on Walker. I think, coming off a down season, first year in Houston, everything lines like the team, the ballpark, you mentioned it all. It's a great spot for him. And most importantly, that projection of that 230 average is kind of silly to me when it comes down, unless he's just broken and we don't know about it. So, yeah, I'm with you on Walker. My target is Vinny P, the big Sasquatch, ADP of 90, the guy that will overtake Freddie Freeman at first base.
Oh, get out of here, man.
Vinny P took that big step forward, played a full season because he had shoulder issues the first 2 years, played a full year, hit 32 home runs, drove in 113, hit 264. The average has been consistent for the most part the last two seasons. Great plate discipline again, still sub 16%. It actually rose a bit, which is crazy because he's been below 13% his entire career. So it rose 3%, but still 16%. I'll take maybe being more aggressive has helped his power when this is all said and done, because we talked about a 11% barrel, 45% hard hit rate on the season, but it was a 14-15% barrel in the second half. He had 20 of his home runs in the second half. We were talking about, I said, maybe it's because, you know, the injury is finally feeling healthy in the second half of the season. I think there's a lot to like about Vinny P. He's only gonna be 28, still young. I don't know if there's another level, but it's also a phenomenal floor. And if anything, if he can move up his average to, like, let's just say 270, 280, to go with 30 plus homers and the RBIs, he nearly had 100 the year before. Like, I think the RBI production will be there, especially with the old Salvi in front of him and Bobby Witt and Mikel Garcia and all those guys. So I love Vinny P, and I'm willing to die on that sword, obviously, be it a high noon, a IPA, or otherwise.
It's gonna taste damn good when I am sipping on an IPA at Dobson, toasting Freddie Freeman to you. Freddie Freeman versus Vinny P was the beer bet, folks. Feeling good about it.
Maybe it'll be a shot of Fireball, thanks to Daniel Preppis.
Oh, those still tasted good, man. Those yes, tasted they did. Damn good.
I was nervous being
a little nervous when the first ones came out. I'm like, that's a little early. Then
we had three more.
See where this goes. And then, And then each one in our foursome bought rounds.
Yes, every time the cart came through. And those apple ones are amazing. Never had those before. So, yes.
Every time summer rolled through.
Yes, literally rolled through. All right, let's head to our fades at first base. And this is the pocket we discussed that you kind of avoid at first base. So who do you have?
Yeah, this was tough because if we are truly kind of sticking to the top 200, yeah. I did not really have, outside of the guy you picked, I would agree with you as the fade. I didn't really have a strong fade in this. And to kind of recap that, there's like 12 first basemen going in the top 110 of ADP, and then only a couple more even going in the 200. And one of those is Christian Walker at like 190. So this is more just I would rather have other guys than take Tyler Soderstrom, who I guess is my, I would say a soft fade. I don't mind having Soderstrom on some teams, but I would just rather Michael Bush going later, Yandy Diaz going later, Christian Walker, Alec Burleson, Sal Stewart going much later. It's more a product of kind of the depth of the first base pool going right after Tyler Soderstrom. The big reason for me for the Soderstrom fade is I don't think he hits 276 again. A pretty spiky BABIP last season. I think Soderstrom's more a 250, 260 guy, and I don't think there's another step up in the power right now unless Tyler Soderstrom changes that launch angle. He's an extreme ground ball hitter, and that's not the profile you want for someone to be a ground ball guy. 49% ground ball rate for Soderstrom, 31% fly ball rate. That's a really low fly ball rate. You've got to carry very fortunate homer to fly numbers if you're Tyler Soderstrom to get back to even the upper 20s. So I think Soderstrom, again, he's fine. First base outfield eligibility helps. If you go like 250, 260 with 20 low 20s homers, that's fine. It's just I like some of the better options at first base going a little bit later.
Yeah, no, I'm not the biggest Soderstrom fan. Like, the skills are fine to your point, but where he's going, I like first baseman is more, there's outfielders are like more like, yeah, he's good. I don't know. I don't have a love for him. Other people do.
When he's going like right after Vinny P. So it's just like,
yeah,
give me Vinny P. Like
all day long.
Quite a bit. Yeah.
For me, it's Jonathan Aranda. And you could add to this if you want, since this was your fade as well. But, you know, he played the 106 games, 14 homers. He's not going to steal. He's never had a steal in his first 4 years. Maybe he'll surprise us. Who knows? He hit 316 after hitting 234, 230, 192. And what was it? Oh, a BABIP of 409 after having a 264, 327, 245. That's a jump, folks. His minor league, there was hopes the power and everything would come. And let's not joke about it. Like, he had a 12.8% barrel and a 54% hard hit, which is really, really good. Even his XBA was 294. So he didn't like massive, it's like a 20-point overachievement. But I think we talked about it on the first base show. It's highly, highly unlikely we see that take place again this season. It's a guy that actually made less contact this year than he did in 2024, which is slightly concerning as well. So, like, yeah, he might hit for average. He might be a poor man's Yandy, but I'm just not a full believer in what took place. I also mentioned the home road splits. He had more homers on the road than at home, but his batting average was tremendously different at home than on the road, like massively different. So if his home average or his home average reminded you of his road average and he slipped from power, okay, that's a conversation. But now we're talking about a 245 guy with 20 home runs. Like, that's fine, but it's also not ADP 176 as your starting first baseman. So where are you at? I know he was a fade of you too, so I'll throw it back to you.
You covered it. I don't really have much to add there on Aranda. I just think, given everything you said with the price and better options later, it's just not someone I'm going to grab.
Fair enough. Let's head to our second base targets, and you actually just drafted this guy.
Yeah, this one's going to get juicy. Not my pick, but your pick. Your pick is also my pick. but we'll go to the
pick. Is your pick as a target?
No, we'll get there.
Okay, I didn't think so. You hate my pick.
I hate your pick. Yeah. Can't stand your pick. We're gonna have to sort something out.
I see it now. You actually wrote it down on the next column. Gotcha.
Your target is my fade. So let's get the little precursor out here. I'm gonna go Bryson Stott. I just drafted Bryson Stott in a NFBC 50 that I'm in. I just think this is a really nice floor. This is someone who is a really good bet for 15 homers, 25 steals, and a really good lineup. There are some issues against lefties, but I think Bryson Stott plays enough that I think he's a really good price. You get the batting average that should be decent, probably 260 type hitter, not a zero in power, and should get you a ton of bags with those counting stats in Philly. So Bryson Stott, if you decide to wait at second base, like going right behind Xavier Edwards, which I'm just not going to do given the pretty much zero in power, going right before like Matt McClain, which is fine, maybe more in fab leagues. I really like the floor for Bryson Stott. He comes out projection wise for me as the 65th best hitter, and by ADP Bryson Stott is the 120th hitter off the board. So I think this is just a boring is beautiful, like wait at second base, take this guy. You're going to get bags. He's not going to hurt you too badly anywhere else. And that's fine for waiting on second base.
Yeah. I've always been I've never minded Stott. It's just like, you got to be cool with potential platoons, 'cause they'll do that from time to time, but he's a strong side. And then like, 'cause I think what it was last year when he wasn't platooning a lot was when they had all those injuries to like Trey Turner and company. Yep. So they had so many moving parts, but at least he proved he could hang. So you'd hope that gets something. So I'm with you. Like, the speed can't be denied. He's got more power than people want to give him credit for. If he can shoot like 250 plus, you're sitting real pretty with Bryson Stott. And I don't mind him at all. Well, I guess I'll start with the positives here before Ryan nukes this situation, because he'll probably have some very sound stats compared to my gibberish. But my target at second base, and James Anderson's on Team Ryan on this one, by the
yes,
way.
Yes, I was happy to hear this.
If
yes.
you listen to Bench with Bubba episode 799, he's on par there too. Maybe not to the extent Ryan's about to be, but Jackson Holliday is my second base target. First, I will mention Jackson's ADP is 141 over the last 30 days. That's a plus out the gate. At age 21, remind you, young, so Ryan's already unqualified to discuss this. Jackson went 17-17 in 149 games, almost 650 plate appearances. He hit 242. So, yeah, the average, not ideal. Hit much better for average in the minors. But we did see the power, the speed, a 21.6% K rate. After, 60 games in 2024, he struck out 33%. So that's a marked improvement of getting comfortable at the plate at the big league level, meaning maybe there's more levels to this stuff. An 8% barrel, 41% hard hit, doesn't jump off the page, but still very solid. Heavy ground ball profile, if Ryan wants to point to that, totally fine. I'll understand that one. But this is a guy that I'm also, when I get my excitement level and things can change, I'm not foolish to this. Right now he's hitting towards the top of the Baltimore lineup with Pete and company behind him. This guy could score 100-plus runs at the same time. I think he's we haven't seen the full Jackson Holliday yet, is what I'm trying to get at. So it's more me liking what we saw last year and speculating. His second half was atrocious. It was bad. he was also banged up. See, I'm trying to get ahead of you on this. He was also banged up.
You say that word again? It started with an A.
Atrocious.
Atrocious. Yes. Okay. Yes. I didn't hear you right. I just want to make sure. Atrocious was mentioned there.
It was atrocious, but he's also an amazing talent, and I think we have yet to see the full skill set of Jackson Holliday. So he's my target now. Ryan, besides the second half, what else you got?
Well, I really hope we haven't seen the full Jackson Holliday, because it hasn't been much.
It's 17-17.
That's not that great over 650 plate appearances. Like, that's really not that great. You need to get 650 plate appearances to not even hit 20 homers or 20 steals. I hear you that Jackson Holliday is a youth. He's 22. The talent is undeniable. I just, in redraft leagues, man, I think you're paying for a pretty big step forward that I think will eventually come with Jackson Holliday. I just don't think it's going to happen in 2026. I mean, you in trying to get ahead of my argument, you basically made the argument for me. Atrocious in the second half. Too many ground balls. Doesn't hit for power yet. Like, what do you actually do? The one thing I'll give you is that he probably will lead off again, and I will give you the run score, like hitting in front of Pete. Like, I get that. It's just like I have not seen really anything in the majors from a skill perspective from Jackson Holliday to really think that major step forward. Well, I think will come eventually. Again, I think will come eventually. I just don't see it all materializing in his age 22 season. 17 steals last year, was only successful 60% of the time. Like, if you're batting in front of Pete Alonso now, are they really going to run Jackson Holliday that much when he's only successful 60% of the time? I don't know. So just a couple more points on that atrocious second half.
60% of the time, it works every time.
Something like that. Power just disappeared. Like, Jackson Holliday, I'll give you the strikeout rate, like, improved, but it's because he didn't hit the ball hard at all. It was a 4% barrel rate in the second half. Like that is Mason Wynn-esque. So I just think, I don't know. I think all this at the price for Jackson Holliday, for me, I think the market is just kind of wish casting that it's going to materialize for Jackson Holliday in 2026. And it might, but I don't see it happening.
Even my dog hates Jackson Holliday, apparently. I'm a believer. You're not going to convince me otherwise. Maybe I'm foolish.
Yeah, we will find a beer bet on this one. Oh,
there will be one. I was going to say, do you have the stones to put Stott up against him? I'm guessing you say no to that.
I mean, that's not fair ADP wise.
Hey, neither is Salvi and Vinny P, or Freddie Freeman and Vinny P, but we'll just leave that one alone. Because they are pretty similar, but we'll think of something there. Just know that in the second half of the season, Jackson Holliday was dealing with a knee injury all season. So
poor yeah. Jackson.
But that could be why he wasn't running or hitting the ball hard. Like there's a double for this shit.
So he doesn't run. He doesn't hit the ball hard.
He's atrocious.
I don't even know if we said this, but my fade is Jackson Holliday.
Oh, no,
I wasn't just responding to you. Like, that is my actual written down fade for second.
We clearly said this. All right. God dang. My fade is Luke Kuechel of the Minnesota Twins, which, if you asked me this when we started draft season, I was all aboard the Kuechel train. But this is where recency bias meets let's dig in some more situation. When it comes to Luke, his ADP for one is a little rich for what I think you're getting. It's 146. It goes right after Sedan Rafael and Jackson Holliday at the position. And I'll take both of them, obviously, over Luke in this scenario. What we saw from Kuechel last year was good. You know, in 49 games, he hit .302, which is good. 14 steals, 4 homers, good plate skills. In the minors, been a lot of speed, good batting average, power has been up and down. But what concerned me with him is, okay, a small sample, but it's a 5% barrel and a 31% hard hit. Does the power ever come to fruition is the question. Like, at least Jackson Holliday had a barrel rate and a hard hit rate, a 46% ground ball rate. So it's on the ground a lot, which with the speed, fine, that plays. But if we're looking for a power profile to go with the speed, it's tough. So at that point, like, yeah, the batting average is there, but will it consistently be there? He had a .340 BABIP, like in the minors, it was 263 at AAA last season before he got called up. Like, he's been a high 260, 280, which is good, but you're basically drafting him for an elite batting average with some speed, where if the average isn't going to be there, just take Bryson Stott later with more power. Like, I'm all aboard that. So I'm just fading Kuechel at his price. Like, if his ADP drops, which it could, I might be more inclined to give him another look. But that in the Twins team context is terrifying at the moment. So yeah. I don't really know what to like there either. So I'm just fading Luke Kuechel, and I do have a share. I took him early, and then the more we've done stuff getting ready for the season, I'm like, yeah, I think I'm going to back off that train.
You might have taken him in the meatball. I can't remember.
I might have. I know I have at least one early share, maybe two, because I was excited about the – and meatball would have made sense because that's when he was actually still playing really well. Like,
yep.
So, yeah.
No, I'm with you. And I actually think the Bryson Stott comp is pretty spot on, honestly. It's just like, I feel like these are similar type players. It's just Keyshaw, you know, only has what, 200 career plate appearances in the majors, and you can take him in the top 150. I'm not there with that. So yeah, Keyshaw's a fade for me. Why take Keyshaw when you can get Bryson Stott X number of picks later?
Agreed. I said shortstop, another old coming to and his fades, yeah, and his fades are young. So
bad, man. This is just, if anyone wants
options,
to skip
out of
ahead.
All the options at shortstop, this is the guy you picked.
Yeah, and I don't even think I did this right, because Xander Bogaerts isn't going in the top 200. I don't think.
No, he's not. No.
So I totally
224
disregarded this.
You want to pick another one while
screw
I talk
it.
About mine?
Yeah. No, I'm going to take Zach Neto instead. I think
that's your pick. There you go. That's good.
Did you take that? Did you?
Sorry. No.
Okay. I like
Zach Neto. But I said that works for you. You like Neto.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'll go Zach Neto instead. I think this is a burgeoning 30-30 guy with good batting average. And yeah, you're going to have to pay up for Zach Neto, but you're going to have to pay up for any good shortstop. That's kind of the thing right now with the market is, I mean, Zach Neto has a top 30, I think, ADP, and is the sixth shortstop off the board. I know you and Ben kind of debated Trey Turner and Zach Neto on a show a week or so ago. I would take Neto over Turner. I would take Neto over Gunnar Henderson. I think Neto can kind of end up in that Lindor, Ellie De La Cruz, not quite Bobby Witt type tier, but I think you can go 30-30 with a good batting average. So yeah, I'll take Zach Neto. That's much more exciting than Xander Bogaerts, who I do like in draft and holds late if you need a middle infielder. You don't doubt that, man. You want to talk about the most boring damn player in all of baseball? It's Xander Bogaerts. Yeah,
zero doubt that you are a Xander Bogaerts drafting fan.
The ceiling is the floor with that guy. Yes. But
if I ever made the thumbnails for this show, like, there would be a Ryan's meet Xander Bogaerts situation there.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, I love Neto. Nothing wrong with that. I was going to put Francisco Lindor because that's my guy, but yeah. I was like, he's a top one or two round pick, so I'll kind of back off of it, but that would be my guy. I want to just mention another one because there are so many shortstops going earlier. I want to talk about Jeremy Peña again, a guy that I had tons of shares of last year. I've been pretty happy with him most seasons. And a lot of it comes down to the fact that, to me, you can pencil in at least 15-15. He's done that two straight years. You're going to get double digits in both homers and steals. But I think as he's gotten into his groove, like 15-15, he's got 20 steals each of the last 2 years. Like, that's a thing. His plate discipline's gotten better. He struck out 17.1% of the time each of the last two seasons. So as he's gotten more comfortable in the bigs, that's improved. Now, he hit 304 last year after hitting 266, 263, 253. He's probably more like that hitter, let's be real. Like, yes, he could have gotten better as he's aged. There's no doubting that. But I'm not counting on 304. Like, projections have him at 272. I think that's fair. I do, just as he's gotten better and plate discipline continues to be a good thing. His barrel rate went up to 8%. His hard hit rate went up to 43%. He showed growth in that regard, which was big. Still a heavy ground ball guy, but I just love the overall tools from Peña. He only played 125 games last year due to injury and put up 17-20 while hitting 304. The team context is good to your Christian Walker point. Still has a short porch and left. He's going to play every day at shortstop. I don't have a ton more to add about him. More than it's just, I think it's a phenomenal floor, and he's showcased different times throughout his early four-year career that he can give you ceilings in certain categories that you wouldn't expect, but because the floor is so good. And I think at an ADP close to 100, if you don't take one of the elite shortstop, he's a phenomenal, like some might say boring, but a phenomenal fallback plan that if you want to double tap shortstop at that range, like a Dansby or somebody else, like you can have a good 1-2 punch with a Jeremy Peña leading the way.
And especially going like kind of in between a bunch of risky shortstops, like Geraldo Perdomo, I think is still risky in terms of just.
I almost put him on my fade.
Regression. Okay. Yeah. I almost did too. But when I can bag Colson Montgomery, I'll do it. But you've got Trevor Story going in front of Jeremy Peña. And then you've got our guy, Corey Seager, going right after Jeremy Peña. It's just a lot of risk in that pocket of shortstops. And Peña stands out, especially again, my mind is on draft and holds right now. It's the perfect target. So I'm with you on that one, man.
All right. I'm fading Colson also. So tell me why you are.
All right, cool. Slightly outside the top 200, but I think an ADP of like 205, 209 over the last month for Colson Montgomery. I just think that's a little rich. I think the floor with Colson Montgomery, and this was written in the forecast, and this was not written by me. This is our good buddy Alan DeLeonardis put a downside of 15 homers with more time in the minors for Colson Montgomery. I just think with the plate approach, he could get eaten alive as the league adjusts. Colson Montgomery, I mean, the power was there in the majors last year. It was like a 15% barrel rate. So there is that. But just he did not – we didn't see like this level of power, anywhere close to this level of power from a skills perspective in the minors from Colson Montgomery. I just have to think that that level of power isn't going to hold in Colson Montgomery's second go around. And I think when it's all built on this pretty shaky plate approach and not being that great against left-handed pitching, I just think there's a lot of holes here at a ADP of 205.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like if people that listened to our show last year, I picked up Colson. I touted Colson. I gave you crap
you
for
did.
Colson every
yes,
time
you
did.
Run.
Yes. Hey, and he helped my fantasy teams tremendously in the fab department. There's no denying that. And if he does go to the minor leagues and gets dropped, I'll probably fab him when he comes back. I'm not going to be opposed to that either. But I'm also not going to pay the price for him right now when there's other shortstops that I like. Well, I'll play already have at least two before we get to Colson Montgomery in a draft. But it's that plate approach that terrifies me. Now, he's young. Maybe things change. Like, he's got the quote-unquote pedigree. But, yeah, I am worried as well with that plate approach. Like, how sustainable is that? And usually not very is the answer. For me, I'm going to go with Jacob Wilson. As my fade, his ADP is 167, which honestly I would have probably thought it would have been higher just because of everyone loving him, but he cooled down in the second half. He had injuries, but also he hit .311, which is great. Struck out 7.5%. Phenomenal. 13 home runs and 5 steals. That's where things get a little bland for me. Like if you look at the first half, second half splits, he had 9 of those home runs in the first half, and everyone thought, oh my God, he might hit 20 homers. No, he also hit .329 in the first half. He stole all 5 bases in the first half. Now, again, he was injured, but 4 homers, 0 steals. He hit .267 in the second half of the season over 38 games. Like, again, maybe there was the injury to do with it, but that's also a dramatic drop. Almost atrocious, some might say,
almost
that position. Yeah. So I think Jacob Wilson is a phenomenal hit tool. I think there's many seasons where he's hit over .300. I think that's fair. I also think that the power and the speed is such a concern that there's zero chance I can take that chance at a position, especially where you can get so many 20, 20, 30, 30 type dudes early, or even like a Jeremy Pena that can go 15, 15, a Swanson, so on and so forth throughout the draft. It's tough to take a Jacob Wilson just for the hopes of a .300 average. When if that's all you want, take Luis Urias 100 picks later and just be like, okay, we're bored, or go get Xavier Edwards or something like that.
I think that's the point too. I'd rather have Urias than Jacob Wilson, especially at the price. And yeah, the pro Jacob Wilson crowd, and I think it is a valid thing, and you hit on it, Bubba, was, you know, he did break his arm basically in second half, did not look the same from a hit tool standpoint. But I just can't see Jacob Wilson hitting 13 home runs again. Like even before the arm injury, it was a 2% barrel rate and 53% ground ball. Like he just doesn't hit the ball hard. Doesn't hit the ball in the air. I know the park is great, but like, I don't think Jacob Wilson gets back to double digit homers. I think he can hit .300. Like I agree with you on the hit tool, but man, it's just tough at Jacob Wilson's price to get less than 10 homers and less than maybe a handful of steals. It's real tough.
Yep. Agreed. All right. Let's head to the hot corner. Who is your third base target?
Matt Shaw. So I'm actually going to go with a youth. I'm going to mix things up a little bit. I think Matt Shaw, you know, there was all this hype for Matt Shaw entering the season that he won the job at third base and basically just fell flat on his face early on, went to the minors, came back and in the second half was really strong. 11 homers, 7 steals in just 237 plate appearances in the second half for Matt Shaw. That barrel rate went up from 4% to 10% in the second half. A few more Ks to get there, but still a reasonable strikeout rate down the stretch. And I think stolen bases at third base is that's something that Matt Shaw can provide. Forecaster, we're projecting 18 homers, 24 steals for Matt Shaw with a .246 batting average. that is, I think, really good for someone whose second go around in the major leagues was quietly very impressive when I kind of dive deeper into what Matt Shaw did after he was recalled and what he did in the second half. So this is the type of youth, this is the type of young guy that I'm going to buy in on, the one who's, I think, priced fairly, has had his struggles to kind of drive that price down, but has also shown the ability to adjust and start to do things against major league pitching.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I like the skill sets there. I just want to make sure the Cubs are bought into him is my only concern, but they should be. But there's like all these rumors.
Interesting.
There's all these rumors swirling about different third base targets they're talking to, this, that, and the other. I don't know why they would. I'm with you. Like, why wouldn't you give Matt Shaw at least a full season to figure it out? But that's my only concern. Other than that, I agree with the improvements we saw.
It's true. It was a 291 OBP. So if we're talking real baseball in the second half, despite all those gains that I mentioned, 291 is tough from an on-base perspective. So I hear you.
That's my only concern. But I think the skills, to your point, are very, very good. For me, it's Mikel Garcia, ADP of 89 over the last month on DCs. This is a guy that seems to, I laugh when I look at his page every time. I feel like he's old. He's 26 this year. Like, he feels like he's
better. Is that it? Ever. Really?
Yeah, he was 25 last season when he hit 16 homers and stole 23 bags, drove in 74, scored 81, and hit 286. He put together his best season as a pro, but he also did so while walking the most in his career at 9.3%, up 3.3, about 2.5% from the previous year. Striking out 12.6%, which was down 4%. Like, that's phenomenal. So the plate skills were great. Power, speed, average, everything you want to see. Is back-to-back seasons of 157 games, and people go, well, is the power legit? Well, I think it might be, weirdly enough, because we saw a massive approach change. Like, his launch angle grew 3.2 degrees compared to his previous two seasons. It came with a 5.6% barrel and a 45% hard hit. Yeah, like, the barrel rate's not elite. I'm not looking for a 30 home run guy. Like, if he gets me 15, I'm over the moon with Mikel Garcia. With that increased launch angle, he also saw his fly ball rate jump 7% with a 6% decrease in ground ball rate. Now, it's just 1 year sample. That's fine. But we've looked at these other guys in recent year. Like, look at Bryce Turan. Look at these young guys. Seeing a young guy do it makes me think there is a legit change to philosophy here. And that's why Mikel Garcia, even the projections have him hitting like 14 home runs. He can basically give me the Jeremy Peña profile, but he's better. Like, he gives me 15-25 with the runs, RBIs, and his average is legit. Where Peña, I think, falls down. Garcia's hit over 300. Like, he's shown big batting averages before. And most importantly, last point, it's at third base where, like you mentioned with Shaw, there's not many steals to be had at third base, period. And now you throw a guy on the hits for average, doesn't crush you in power, and steals bags. I love Mikel Garcia. I've targeted him a ton in drafts so far.
Okay. I like it. And should lead off. I know the Royals lineup isn't all that, but if you're leading off in that lineup, you are leading off ahead of Bobby Witt and Vinny P and Sal P.
That's our third Royal we've mentioned in the infield.
Jesus.
As a target.
Yeah, you're right. And I kind of like Jack Caggs.
Of course you do. Well, I think we all like Bobby Witt. We're just not talking about him. So it's like, there's at least something to like in the infield. They keep trading for every outfielder, but the infield looks good.
Yeah.
And Carter Jensen, don't forget.
Yeah, you keep bringing that guy up. I don't know.
I'm not going to let people forget. Who's your fade at third base?
My fade is Addison Barger.
I almost put him, so yeah.
Yeah, I kind of, for all I said about Matt Shaw and kind of his improvement in adjusting to major league pitching, Addison Barger was kind of shaky down the stretch. This is, I think, a pretty entrenched platoon bat, not going to play against lefties. So you already kind of have that built in playing time cap. 2 months to end the season, hit 205 with a 630 OPS. Like, that's pretty rough for Addison Barger. And I know you don't want to look too far into kind of picking and choosing arbitrary timelines with small samples like this, but I think for guys in their first, second go around against major league pitching, you do need to do that. And Addison Barger needs to adjust back in his second full season here, in order to meet that ADP. So Addison Barger for me is a pretty easy fade. The projections really don't like him, both from a kind of skill standpoint, but also from a playing time cap standpoint too.
Yep, fully agree. I love what he did for us last year. I love the idea, but the playing time concerns the snot out of me. I'm going to go Eugenio Suarez, ADP of 118. A couple of factors. A, he still doesn't have a team, so I don't know what to expect from Eugenio. Came off 49 home runs, which is great, but hit 228. And if you look back at the career of Eugenio Suarez, the only other times he hit 49 home runs, he hit 271. Most of his career, it's been 20 to 30 homers, which is fine, but a horrific batting average. And he struck out 30% of the time last year. Like, talk about run good is what I'm going to say, even in Seattle, which makes it interesting. Yep. His home run to fly ball was 24.4%, the best since 2019. And he's done it multiple times in his career, so maybe it's a thing. But to wager on, and he had a 50.4% fly ball rate, by far the best of his career. He did everything you'd want to hit for that power and no batting average. He's also going to be 34. So between the strikeout rates, so the plate discipline, the just run as hot as humanly possible in the home run department, and the year in and year out usually disappointment in batting average. Like, I get what he can do in the power. I'm just not going to take the risk on my team, because I think with Eugenio, if he plays every day like he's played 159, 158, 152, 150, even 145, that batting average destroys you. Like, that's over 600 plate appearances of low 200s batting average. Like, the power is great, but the average just kills your team, and I just usually am going to avoid that.
Yeah, I mean, you look down the home run column for Suarez, 31, 31, 22, 30, 49. It's like, yep, one of those, I think, is an outlier. So yes, I think that's coming back down. And then, I don't know, you look at third base, like going right after Suarez is like Alex Bregman, Jordan Westberg. I think I'd rather have both those guys than Eugenio Suarez.
Agreed. All right, who's your outfield target? No, to the surprise of nobody.
What the hell, man?
Another old, is what I'm saying.
Another old, you know, 36. So him and Sal Perez can go over the hill.
It's gonna be like the Heisman house pretty soon for you. Yeah. The Bloomfield Olds house.
That's actually pretty good. I've got ideas around that now, actually.
Yeah,
they're all just like old, chilling on the couch.
You can hope so many Photoshop ideas come in your direction.
I've actually been in a Heisman house.
I was at one in Madison when Ron Dane was there.
Nice. Yeah, I played. Yeah. I met Joey. Me and Burks met Joey Harrington in a Heisman house at the Duck game last year.
Harrington.
It was like Lions. An inflatable Heisman house. It was really freaking cool, actually. It was like an inflatable Heisman house. Joey Harrington was there. They had a living room we could play NCAA. They had the actual Heisman was there, of course. Yep. So it was pretty sweet.
No, it's a cool setup they do wherever they take the trip to. It's usually an ABC game, and they knock it out. It's good.
Yep. So yeah, George Springer's the pick. He can enter the Heisman house with me. George Springer last year, I mean, that's not happening again. We all
ran as hot as the surface of the sun.
He absolutely did. He absolutely did. But like, I did not think Springer's ADP would be 96.
Agreed.
I mean, I don't know. I thought I would say I you know, before ADP existed, I'd be like, I'd be out on George Springer at a top 50 price. 96, like, yes, even factoring in quite a bit of regression, which I think is coming. This is just a pure, like, the projections absolutely love George Springer at this price. He comes out as one of the best bargains of any hitter in baseball at a price of 96. And the risk is that Springer, like, didn't quite end the season outside of the Game 7 home run, but, like, hurt his oblique swing at the end of the year. Like not great. The floor here could be George Springer just gets injured a ton again, but like the last 4 years, plate appearances 579, 681, 608, 579, been pretty durable. Skills are fantastic, and again, everyone is at the price, and at a 96 ADP, like, George Springer comps more to outfielders going in the top 50 from a projection standpoint. So I think it's a pretty obvious buy. Maybe I'm the sucker here, but looks really good to me.
No, I'm just giving you a hard time because he's old. Like, I think, yeah, I buy it. Even the regression should be pretty good. The only thing that's going to stop him, I think, from making that price is an injury, which could happen. Definitely happen with George, but I think that's about it. That Jays team's going for it. They're not giving up. Like, they're still building. So,
yeah,
like, the team should be just fine. I'm going to go in your neck of the woods, a guy that you and I love every year, basically. And that's Randy Arozarena. So, like, to your point about Springer never, like, his ADP, Randy is always in this, like, around 100. He's just chilling. He's 96 right now. Like, I understand the average can be concerning, 238 last year, 219 the year before. But prior to that, it was 250 or better, which was a plus. Still strikes out at 27%. But we saw 27 homers, 31 steals, which gives him, yes, five straight seasons of 2020 baseball. That is, like, just being able to write that down every single season and hope he runs better in the, like, his BABIP's been below 300 the last 2 years. It was always above 300. Like, if he can just slowly run a little better, that would be phenomenal when all things are said and done. Ground ball rate dropped a little bit last year, so maybe they can, you know, work on getting that back up to get the BABIP back up. But if somehow he gets back to hitting like 260, it's a 30-30 dude, and that Mariners team's still very good offensively. They bring a Naylor back in company. Yep. Like, I love Randy Arozarena being able to, like, most of your 2020, 30-30 guys are gone by like pick 50-ish, give or take. So to get one around 100, I like a lot.
Yep. 100%. And I think it's huge that Randy Arozarena did what he did last year in Seattle. I think that can quell some kind of concerns about the park, because the team context is really good, at least near the top of the lineup. So agreed. I'm with you, man. I will build plenty of outfields with Arozarena, Springer, freaking Tay Oscar's another one. Just bring the band back together, get them back all on my squad.
Dude, that is the most Bloomfield thing I've heard. I don't hate it though, because they're all good. It's just straight up, like, come on. We'll be streaming the labor draft. I can see it now. It's round five. Bloom, you need to start getting out. It's a five outfielder league, dude. Don't worry, I got this. By the end of round 10, he's got freaking Arozarena, Springer, and Teoscar just sitting there.
Would it surprise you, in my current NFBC 50, I did not take an outfielder until the seventh round, and I've got George Springer and Teoscar Hernandez on said outfield now.
Almost nailed exactly what I said without even
exactly knowing what you just said. Exactly.
I know you too well.
Yeah, this is kind of bad. It's kind of sick.
All right. Who's your fade in the outfield?
All right. So, God, prospect folks are just probably freaking hate me.
Yeah, it's like if you guys just look at the sheet here, it's old. Yes. Fade, young, old. Like, literally, catcher, Prez, Basayo. We have Stott, Holiday. Stott's technically the elder there. Even Walker Soderstrom, if we want to get technical. Neto, Springer. Montgomery. You took Matt Shaw. I'll give you that.
There you go. Come on. Took Matt Shaw.
Let's just say it's not going to get better down the list. So continue as you were.
So my target is old George Springer. My fade is Roman Anthony.
He's one of the top outfield prospects in all of baseball. Yeah, no big deal.
He's 22, number one prospect. Screw this guy,
it's
man.
Like, I just picture, like, get the kid from Big Daddy, put all these guys' heads on, look at Ryan and go, I wipe my own ass. What do you want from me?
Oh my God. I don't know, man.
Happy, like, holidays, everybody.
I just like, and I almost picked Wyatt Langford. He's going right behind Roman Anthony. Like, I'd rather have George Springer than these two guys, straight up.
We know.
Straight up. So I don't know, man. For me, like, I can't even get through this. I just think there's more adjustments Roman Anthony needs to make. Like, it's a really high K rate. Last year, a ton of ground balls. Like, yeah, the power is great, but, like, only hit 8 home runs in 303 plate appearances last year. Similar to what I said about Jackson Holiday, like, this is going to come together at some point. But, like, for me to spend a top, again, price is everything. For me to spend the 47th pick on Roman Anthony, I just think it's way too rich. I think James agreed with me too. James Anderson, say, on your Bench with Bubba show.
Yeah, it's James says he regrets taking him in the meatball on the 3-4 turn. Yep.
You're just a similar thing with Jackson Holiday. You're just, and this is even worse than Jackson Holiday, because it's a top 50 pick.
What word's worse than atrocious?
I mean, at least Jackson Holiday is like a 150 pick. This is 50 overall. You're just banking on a lot of growth right away from Roman Anthony. Not to say it's not going to happen. It could very well happen, and I look wrong here, but, like, man, top 50 pick for, if you just in a vacuum look at what Roman Anthony's done in the majors last year, it's just, I need to see it happen first. And if it happens and he's not on my teams, so be it. I'm fine taking that risk and having that breakout happen on someone else's team, just because more often than not, that breakout doesn't happen right away in that season.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like I even said it to James. I said started draft season. I was like, okay, I like the idea of Roman Anthony. And then the more I've dug into him, I'm like, why is he a top 50 pick? Like he has to shoot for the moon to get that ADP. And
it's not a hate on Roman Anthony. It's a hate on the price. It's a hate on the price.
100%. That's a great way to sum it up before all the pitchforks get to you. All right, I'll keep mine super short and sweet. Like hopefully his season in the majors. Chandler Simpson's got an ADP of 154. Chandler Simpson hits for average and steals a million bases. Chandler Simpson does nothing else. So Chandler Simpson will not be on my teams.
Yeah. For pitching, would it also surprise you that my target here is also 36 years?
Oh, no. I literally said a second ago that the farther down the list we go, it doesn't change.
So my pitching target is Sonny Gray. Who is the third 36-year-old on the squad.
Good.
Welcome, Sonny. I have, per my projections, I have Sonny Gray down for 170 innings of a 3.45 ERA, 1.15 WHIP, 27% strikeout rate, and 12 wins. That nets Sonny Gray out to the number 14 starting pitcher. And Sonny Gray by ADP is the number 41 starting pitcher. So maybe I'm a little aggressive on that. I don't know, but like Sonny Gray's been dependable the last few years. The skills have been excellent. I just think you're getting a potential top 20 pitcher at a price outside the top 40 among starting pitchers. And it's just simple as that. I don't care how old Sonny Gray is. Like, I'll take anyone, even if they're 26, but I'll take anyone projected that I have in the top 20 going outside the top 40. It just happens to be a 36-year-old.
I love Sonny Gray. I don't have to add on to that. Big fan. I have plenty of shares of him. Like, I almost put him down, but I left him to the old lover over there. So, I'm just going to put my usual suspect down here just to remind people about Freddie Peralta. His ADP is 64, so he's moving up, and people are probably like, I don't know if I could pay that price. But I just want to I did this to remind people. When we talked about reviewing starting pitchers, he's like the first one that kind of drops off the quote-unquote workhorse. But the dude's thrown 165 to 176 innings three straight years. He's put that together. His ERA at worst was 3.86. It was 2.7 last year, but it's always been pretty darn suitable. His WHIP has been 112 or below outside of a 121 last year and every year since 2021. The K to walk's usually 19%-ish, give or take, or higher. Like, it's been very, very good. He's just an absolute machine. Three straight years of 200 strikeouts, 195 and 4 out of 5. So I just want to bring him up for the fact he's pretty darn reliable and consistent in his stat categories. And he, just because he's not a workhorse like we try to preach with an early pick, his returns are still very, very, very good. So Freddie Peralta, if you're not a take pitcher early and you want to wait till round 4 or 5, he is a phenomenal ace to put on your team because you can kind of still pencil in a really strong build.
And there's so much you can do if you wait. This is more just a kind of general level draft talk, but like going around Freddie Peralta's like Logan Webb, Joe Ryan, which we both like. I like George Kirby. Like you can wait. Dylan Cease is going there. We both like Lizardo. You can wait. And I feel like I say this every year, but you can wait till that like fourth round to get starting pitch and grab two or three really good ones right there and not be behind, in my opinion, at all at starting pitching.
All right. Who's your young fade?
Here's my young fade. This guy's not that young. Come on, give me some credit here. It's Tyler Glasnow. I mean, for the last, and I've rostered Glasnow before, and with, you know, under the thought that if I can just get like 130 innings from him, the skills are good enough that it's worth the injury risk. Well, what we saw last year from Tyler Glasnow is, you know, only 90 innings, but even worse than that, the skills took a major step back, like did not have command. It was a 12% walk rate. Typically that's been 7 or 8% for Tyler Glasnow. Strikeouts were down a bit, but the whiff rate was down a ton for Tyler Glasnow last year. Traditionally around 15-16%, was down to 11% with a drop in velocity for Glasnow and shoulder issues. So like, I don't even think the kind of the risk reward proposition is there with Glasnow necessarily, because I don't even know if the skills now you need the innings and you need the skills rebound. Like I think the skills are in question now. And once both those things are in question at Tyler Glasnow's price, now I am out.
Yeah. I've always been out on Glasnow. So I'm with you because injuries always concern me. And if you're going to say the skills are bad too, then yeah, not great, Bob. For me, there's a lot of young arms I'll just be fading in these early picks. So I'll take this run from you. I got you here. I'm going with Jacob Mizorowski. The Miz, great story, great nickname. Lots of fun when he's on. When he's off, it's not great at all. His like profile, his initial 1 year sample, looks like a great closer, is what he looks like he could be. Because he in his 66 innings, he had a 4.36 ERA to go with a 3.56 ERA. So this year is fine, but I think that ERA is pretty darn fair when you start looking at a guy that had an 11.4% walk. He had a 20.5% K to walk. The dude has had he's had an above 11% walk rate at every level he's ever pitched at in the minors, and then also to start the bigs. He's also had a 30% or better K rate most times, so that's why it's the yin and yang. It reminds me a lot of Glasnow, honestly. If he got control, there's a lot of nastiness there. I just don't think this year I'm paying an ADP of 125 for that inconsistency.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. Full agree. He would be a fade for me, as will Chase Burns, honestly.
Yes, that was him, and even Treya Savage were on my list of things to talk about. So, yes. Yep. All right, who's your closer?
I am going to go Hunter Hearst Helsley. I'm going to go Ryan Helsley. I think now he has the job. I think you just need to look at and weigh like how good Ryan Helsley has been in really the last 4 years compared to just a really brutal 2 month stretch with the Mets last season, where he allegedly rumored, I guess, to be tipping his pitches. And I think that's something that's fixable, something mechanical that can be cleaned up over the offseason. So I think Ryan Helsley has the job. He has the skills. And I think most importantly, you're getting him at a price where you don't have to pay up for top closer value going, you know, in the last month at 130. But even since he signed, Ryan Helsley has been like 102, 109 over the last couple of weeks. I still think that's, given the skyrocketing price of closers in 2026, I think that's a really nice kind of sweet spot where you can get someone who I think will be good, will have the job, and is like, I think, reliever 10-ish off the board. I think that's a nice place to go grab that RP1.
I think it's a great point, especially forgetting about that half a year at the Mets. Dude's been one of the best relievers in the game for quite some time.
Yep.
I hated taking one early, but I just want to go back to my Mason Miller stance here. And it's just tough when we're talking top 200. They go so early in this draft now where you almost have to like pick one of them. So you picked Helsley, which is great because it's not one of the captain obvious ones. I'll take Miller, ADP of 32. I just want the dude 100 plus Ks. Ratios are legit. Like, he's just a beast. Yeah, he had a little scare last year, but everyone's anointing Edwin Diaz RP1, and that's fine. But I still think Mason Miller is my RP1, unless I could see myself changing that at some point. But I'm still pretty confident in the skills of Mason Miller, and that's my guy.
Yep, I like it. I like it.
All right, I was gonna put this guy as my fade as well. So I like your call.
Yeah, for me, it's my biggest fade is Josh Hader. This is just a pure health uncertainty type deal. Josh Hader, if healthy, is in my opinion, a top five reliever. But shoulder strain ended his season last year in August, didn't come back. There are reports that Josh Hader is going to be fine. I'd like to believe it when I see it. So it's just I'm not going to spend a top 70 pick on a reliever who ended the season with a shoulder problem. And I think, and I've said this in the Discord, like if you take Josh Hader, you damn better pair him with Brian Abreu in that same draft just to cover yourself. But then you're taking two picks. I mean, Brian Abreu is he's not expensive, but you have to handcuff there. And now you're using two picks on one bullpen. And you don't want to do that when you're spending a top 70 pick on a closer. So just way too much health uncertainty. Now, if Josh Hader looks good in spring, velocity's back, I'll put him back on my board. But right now the uncertainty is too much.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Uncertainty is terrifying to me as well. Mine's Trevor Megill, and it's kind of the uncertainty factor as well. Yep. A guy that was super, super good to start the season. And then he gets hurt, and Abner Uribe takes over, and life is great from there. And then when Megill comes back, he's not involved in the closing situation, and maybe they're babying him back. Like, as of now, it appears he's the closer, but no one's actually said that. And so just that the health, he didn't have the surgery, the uncertainty if he has the role, and an ADP of 104, like, I'm out on Megill. I thought he was good. I feel like they want to put him out there to trade him, but I'm just not going to take that chance at 104.
Very risky for, yeah, pretty much the same reasons as Hader there.
Yep, agreed. We were on the same page on our fade on that one as well. All right, that's our targets and fades. Who's your favorite target on the whole list?
My favorite target on the whole list, I will say George Springer.
Of course he did.
He's the mascot of my nursing home team.
Yeah, it's tough. I have like four guys or five. Yeah, I like a lot of this list. So you're going to go George Springer. I will go with, I guess I got to stay on brand. Give me the Goose, Agustin Ramirez.
The guy, man.
Well, I think he's a game changer at the position. If you just look at the position scale, I think he's a game changer personally. I am biased. All right, final thoughts, man, as we head off. Hope for everyone will be enjoying the holidays by the time they listen to this, hopefully, and whatnot. So final thoughts.
Just hope everyone's having some good downtime, some good holiday time with friends and family. We will be back most likely next week with some New Year's resolutions, which is one of my favorite shows. So we're getting there into 2026, and then, man, things are gonna pop off in January as they always do. There's always an instant turn once we get into New Year. Baseball really starts to kind of take over from that other sport. So
yeah, our schedule's already pretty packed already when we get done with our vacation, so we'll see where that goes. But yeah, hope everybody's happy holidays. Again, resolutions coming up next week, which also means keep getting us your information if you want to play in the listener leagues. Please let us know.
Yep.
So we can get some lists put together there. And also, there'll be an announcement on that resolution episode I really hope you guys listen to. It's a little teaser there for you for the New Year's resolution. But until then, make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Intrick, and this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 305. Catch y'all next time.